coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, good afternoon out there, everyone. I have a question to ask everybody. Have you ever thought what would happen if our grid system went down? Well, our guest will clue us in on that. Retired policy analyst for the Department of Defense for 23 years, Michael Maloof, warned us of the dangers of an EMP attack. He is now aligning with George Norrie's campaign to protect the grid. Michael's outlined how either a nuclear attack in the atmosphere or an intense solar flares could cripple everything from daily routines to national defense. Michael breaks down the threat in his book, A Nation Forsaken. He even outlines how our military is also vulnerable to the EMP event due to a 99% dependency on the nation's electrical grid system for electricity and communications, raising the high prospect that it may not be able to function to defend the nation in time of the greatest need. You are now listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula.
And I'm Taz. Yay, Michael Maloof and George Norrie. So glad that the big guns are on it. In 2008, a congressional commission studied the consequences of an EMP attack, not only the power grid itself, but also the consequences to every sector of our economy, telecommunications, banking, transportation, food, manufacturing, construction, and energy. So why isn't Congress doing anything about it? While these critical infrastructures continue to face such an impending crisis, Congress has basically ignored its own commission report and instead has treated the threat of an EMP event as a political football to be punted whenever expedient for their own gain. Paula, it's plain to see we are so busy in our own daily lives, we forget about the scale if it's tipped too far. I'm so glad we have Michael on our doorstep with us today.
Yes, and you know, Michael, we welcome you to our show, and it's going to be
Thank
a
you.
Wonderful show. My thought here, as I've talked to different people, that some of the folks out there that's listening to us, they don't even know about the power grid and how it works and how mm-hmm. complicated it is and how it can affect us if it went down. Can you give us the basics about the
sure.
power grid?
Sure. Well, our electrical grid, and there are three of them in the United States. We have the Eastern Grid, the Western Grid, and the Texas Grid. And they sort of work hand in glove with one another. But they are meant to provide the essential electricity to make this country work, from our industries and our power plants into our homes, and we just take all of this for granted. We just assume things are going to work. We have automated control systems which require electricity, and if we have serious, as you pointed out earlier, serious critical infrastructures that depend upon the grid in order to function. And these are life-sustaining critical infrastructures now. These, by life-sustaining, I mean we rely on communications, we rely on our not only the grid, but the communications, the ability to deliver food and water every day, the ability to pump our fuel into our cars, even to make our cars run because they have electrical automated systems themselves. Also, our ATM machines, our emergency services, all of these are predicated on the ability of that grid to work. Well, we've been, over the years, we've been basically building on the grid with more and more demand, and as the demand increases for more electricity to meet more exotic and new levels of technology that we put on it, we just add on. We basically have a jerry-rigged system in effect throughout the United States now. And what happens is that, and there has been some tinkering with it to try and make it immune to, let's say, nearby lightning strikes and what have you, but nothing that would compare should there be an electromagnetic pulse event, either from the sun or from a man-made source of high-altitude nuclear explosion, that the pulse of which is far stronger than lightning, is far stronger than even a solar flare, and it could knock out all vulnerable electronics. And so this has been the subject of my book, why the federal government, who's known about this for years and years and years, has really done very little, if anything, about it. And given all the other pressures we have coming, they're not addressing it. For example, the federal government, of course, has control over the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and we've been trying endlessly to get the Department of Homeland Security to make EMP one of their 15 national planning scenarios. These scenarios are what kicks in should there be an emergency such as hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, even terrorist attacks. And from those planning scenarios, the state and local officials take their lead, and then they then devise their own planning scenarios based upon the national planning scenario. Well, if you don't have one for EMP, then that means your state and local officials haven't done it either. So if an EMP occurs, especially over a wide geographical area, then we have to assume that almost all communications will be knocked out. Your emergency services, which also rely on electricity and communications, may not be able to function. And your law enforcement will be in a similar condition, and basically then you're on your own. And that's one of the reasons why I and a few others are calling for reestablishment or recreation, if you will, of the civil defense locations throughout the country, like we had during the Cold War, to have food, water, essential medications stored, so that if there is such an event, people will know where to go to. Now, this is a vulnerability to this nation. When you combine this vulnerability with other vulnerabilities that we're now seeing occurring, such as the flooding of immigration coming over the borders unchecked, which could also include your Al-Qaeda units that merge in with your drug cartels and your MS-13 people, which already are in about 1,200 U.S. cities, we see a pattern of activity here that portends a very serious vulnerability to this nation. And what's really incredible is that all of these vulnerabilities could be fixed, including EMP.
Hmm. Now, Michael, I have a question. My question is, When we talk about protecting our system, is mm-hmm. this a protection field that goes around in some way that if the electrical impulse were to strike it, or mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking if the sun, the solar flares from the sun, it's like you mm-hmm. never know when that's going to happen.
True.
You know.
True.
And no. So is there some kind of field, a protection field, that it would hit first before?
As we upgrade the grid and all electronics upon which it depends, we should be putting in radiation-hardened chips, technologies, that can be able to withstand that. Now, by doing that, we begin to mitigate the problem very, very in a great way. But if we don't do anything, then we're highly vulnerable. Now, we can, and the systems are being upgraded all the time. What they need to be doing is putting in more of your radiation-hardened chips, being able to ground these facilities. And as you point out, if a solar flare can hit at any time, now the response from the utilities is, well, we'll get about a few hours' notice from NASA, and we can shut down the grid. But what we've discovered is that if you get a direct hit, and even from a nuclear device, you could burn out even something that's turned off. So what we need to do is be able to harden that grid, be able to put in more capacitors, be able to put in more grounding of all of our systems, all of our utilities, and that needs to be done on a nationwide basis. Now, how do you go about that? Well, ideally, if we had a greater priority from the federal government and had somebody under the National Security Council that could coordinate federal, state, local activities to harden the grid systems and the utilities across the country, then we help mitigate it. Now, we're not going to eliminate it entirely if we get some kind of a hit, because something's bound to pop, but it will not be completely knocked out as it would be if we did nothing.
Is that like a cloak or something that would be out there?
Is that like a what?
A cloak.
It would be within the individual systems. We've got to be able to it would be built within the hardware itself. There wouldn't be any cover per se, a literal cover, like you would have on a Faraday cage to store some valuable electronics and what have you. But it would be more of upgrading the hardware itself so that it's able to withstand an electromagnetic pulse. Electromagnetic pulse is a high intense form of energy, electromagnetic energy, such as your X-rays, your gamma rays, and these come at terrific speeds. And if your electronics are not protected, including your grid, then it will just knock them out or fry them altogether and absolutely destroy it. And I mean, there have been instances where there have been nearby lightning strikes on unplugged equipment, electronic equipment that got fried. So it's not impervious. Even unplugged stuff is not impervious to such a condition. And that's why we need to ensure that we in providing a protection of our grid system, whether from natural or man-made means, that we start focusing attention on that type of technology. It's going to cost. And this is where the federal government, in cooperation with the states and local governments, can begin to do something. But again, I think you need that national coordinator. Now, we do have legislation that's pending in the House called the SHIELD Act, which has been which has passed the House about two or three previous times, but it's never made its way through the Senate. And the latest version of the SHIELD Act does address the hardware issue, and it then gives the federal government authority to direct the utilities to fix these things. Now, we don't want the utilities to be absorbing all the costs. And this is where the federal government could maybe put up as much as about $2 billion, and the problem would be resolved. And that eliminates at least one serious vulnerability that this nation is facing right now. Because if the lights go out and all communications go out, nothing else is going to matter. We're going to have over 300 million people who are potentially facing certain death. And we're talking 90%, and this is an estimate by NASA, just from a direct solar flare should it hit Earth. And some of these solar flares are 14 times the size of the Earth itself, so it would encompass the entire Earth. It would throw communities back into the 19th century. And if you're able to live without your lights and electricity and running water and all that stuff, then you're going to be okay. And you have a means of obtaining food or growing your own food. You'll be fine in that regard, but then you're going to be fighting off people, the have-nots, who are going to be wanting what you got. So that you're going to have basically anarchy and chaos, and it can be very catastrophic for the society, and that then leaves us extraordinarily vulnerable to other potential threats as a consequence.
So it sounds like the solar flares are even more dangerous than
They're the most immediate threat, because we're going through that period now of a solar flare maximum, and they can spin off at any time. It depends upon if the to keep it in the simplest terms, if the sunspots on the Earth on the sun are in approximate alignment with Earth, then we are highly vulnerable. And they spin around, they'll come around, and then when they start spewing these, lashing these flares off the solar surface, again, you see they're huge. They make the Earth look like a dot compared to their size. It's unbelievable. And if one of those comes straight at us, then that will interfere with our magnetic poles and fry all the electronics that's not protected. And that seems to be the most the area that's of the most immediate concern right now. NASA says if we're hit with one of those direct ones, the United States alone would sustain a $2 trillion cost within the first year. And it would take 4 to 10 years to recover, and it would probably cause 90% of the U.S. population to die from starvation. And it would certainly eliminate your urban centers as a consequence. Because of the inability to store food, they rely 100% on deliveries, including water to be able to process it. You wouldn't be able to go anywhere because fuel pumps wouldn't work. It can be rather catastrophic. And all the things that we take for granted, like stoplights, how they work on automation, the pumping of the gas, the ATM machines, even the regulating the flow of your natural gas and oil through pipelines, the million of miles of pipelines that crisscross this nation, all of those would be jeopardized, and you would have secondary fires and explosions. Also, because of the sewage systems also rely on electronics in the cities, that would begin to build up and pile up, including garbage, and as a consequence, disease would then begin to happen. And disease can kick in very, very quickly, especially in hot climates.
Now, we're going on a lot of alternative electricity, like solar and wind. And
it's not going to be sufficient for the entire population. In fact, it's minuscule compared to what energy demands this country has for everything today.
I was just thinking
it would be a non-starter.
Well, there's some cities like San Francisco, they're going to try to get off the grid.
But they've got to be sure that what they have is that there are no electronic components. Those electronic components could also be jeopardized. I might also add your nuclear power plants. They have generators that can kick in, but that they will only last for as long as there's fuel, and then you have the potential problem of overheating of the nuclear core. And then you have what occurred in Japan a few years ago at Fukushima, in which then areas then become irradiated and you can't enter them because the cores became were not cooled off.
We're also
beginning to see another problem occurring. And you said you're in the San Jose area, I believe.
Yes. Huh?
You had an episode there a few years ago, in which somebody shot out some 17 transformers. We're seeing this occurring in additional cities, and we think that when you shoot out the transformers, and given the precision of where they hit those transformers, the idea was to cause the coolant within those transformers to leak, and then thereby fry the transformers. And many of those transformers are so large that they have to be special ordered, and they're very difficult to replace in normal times. And we've seen some episodes now in New Jersey And the concern among security officials is that this may be the basis for something larger to happen. And I think security officials are watching this very closely, because the San Jose episode was not the first. And if people know where to hit these transformers, know where they're located, first of all, and they're not in physically secure areas oftentimes, then that poses a vulnerability. We've never had threats to the homeland like we're beginning to see occurring now, and we're not ready for them. And I know some of us have been warning since the mid-70s of these prospects of vulnerabilities from a physical security standpoint. Your electricity, your towers and what have you, they're all open, and they're not protected in any way. And if there's minimal protection, there's ways around it, especially if someone's determined to hit them and be successful and create havoc.
Well, the terrorists could come in and hit all over the United States. I mean, different
sure.
places.
Well, as I said, you've got the cartels. You got the cartels and the MS-13 people already in 1,200 U.S. cities, and there's information out there that shows that Al-Qaeda and the cartels have been talking to one another and working with one another, just in an attempt to potentially smuggle into the United States. And given the flow of immigration that we're now seeing down at the border, unchecked, unregulated now. A lot of those young children, if they can call them that, are young people who could potentially be sleepers for the cartels and the MS-13 people. And they could actually infiltrate and actually plan these kinds of activities within our communities throughout the United States.
And are the trucks allowed to go across the border without being checked? I mean, I know at one point people were complaining about that. And
mm-hmm.
they come back and forth without being checked. Is that still true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as I know.
Well,
again, I don't watch the border that closely, but on a day-to-day basis. But I know of the instances, and if they are checked, it's probably very superficial now because your Customs and Border Patrol people are in such high demands of changing diapers and what have you. So you know, it's very
yeah.
difficult.
I really question, Michael. Also, what about putting the grid system under the ground so it's not as vulnerable in that way that people can see things? And how would that go?
Well, it basically would require a massive investment to put everything underground that we just don't have the resources to do right now. We can build walls around it and what have you, but... And we can certainly harden the grid, and that's what we ought to focus on. We ought to go with what is rather than trying to expend money that's going to take years and years and years to replace completely with a new system. And even then, if you have any attenuating wire, they can act as antennas and still burn things out. So
well,
that's why it's really essential to harden everything. That's key.
Plus,
there's
the states like New York that can't have it underground in Louisiana because of flooding.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, underground Louisiana down New Orleans, it's already under normal circumstances. It's New Orleans is 5 feet below sea level, so nothing could go underground in those locations along. And you know, about 70% of your population is generally along the coastlines anyway.
What is the hold up as far as doing zero point energy out there? I mean, and I know Tesla has created aspects that I think our military might be aware of at this point. And you know, what's the matter going in that direction instead of doing archaic forms?
Well, again, it's going to take time and resources and money and time. And I think we're on borrowed time now. You can work up exotic systems and what have you, but what we need to focus right now on is fix what we have, and let's get
basics.
That going. Then we can work on the other stuff.
Now,
well, how
I'm,
do we go
I'm
forward?
Shocked. I was going to say, I'm shocked that the military is dependent on the grid system. Why don't they have their own system so they don't have to be dependent?
Well, they're working on a microgrid, but again, that's going to be dependent on, and it's only in a very few locations on an experimental basis. And even that's exposed, and it probably feeds in from the regular grid system on the outside. But it's and they also their watering systems and everything on the bases depend upon the civilian sector. And if that's why we've really got to start focusing on fixing the U.S. Civilian sector, and then all the other stuff will work. Now we've got the military has knowing about EMP has hardened their offensive weapons systems against an EMP such as your battleships and your aircraft and what have you. But that's operational. That has nothing to do with the ability just to function. And they haven't been able to do that. And I would add that there's, you know, the question then is, well, why don't we get the Defense Department to go ahead and do all these things? Because, well, the Defense Department looks upon the Department of Homeland Security as the lead in fixing the homeland. So, and therein lies the rub. And if DHS is lax, then nothing's going to get fixed. And right now they're lax.
Well, the Homeland Security is a fairly new organization.
Oh, you got to go. Okay.
Okay. They're a fairly new organization. Are they well organized, the Homeland
well,
Security?
Well, it came about as a result of 9/11, and a lot of agencies were thrown into it. And I would say that is one of the single agencies whose morale is the lowest today among the federal agencies. They have a lot of responsibility, but there's a lot of infighting and people are on burnout anyway because we've been on alert constantly since 9/11, and people are just getting tired. And then you have the usual and customary bureaucratic lethargy that kicks in, and we've seen that time and again. And the ability to coordinate and work with other agencies also is lacking. So it's a mess.
Yeah. We need a big cheerleader. Hey, how
we
do
need a
we
president.
Think? Yeah. How do we shake up loose? How do we loosen up Congress here to go forward on what needs to be done?
Well,
is there...
I'm hoping that after the November elections that we're going to see some changes in Congress that'll be more prone toward being proactive in this area. And, again, as I said, we're already on borrowed time, and they're going to have to act fast. And I think that we need to the SHIELD Act is a good first start, and if both House and Congress passes that, even after the legislation is passed, it will take at least 5 years to get fully implemented. So we're talking about some lead time that's – and if we're already on borrowed time, anything after that is going to be we're going to be in an increasingly compromising position, and then we have a lot of people on the outside world who hate our guts, and more and more now they're getting missile and nuclear capable technologies that they could potentially use against us. So we not only have the internal vulnerability and threat, we also have the external, and therein is why even though we have oceans separating us from other conflict zones, this can actually come back and bite us rapidly.
So we need to be writing our congressmen.
Yeah, I think a very conscientious effort needs to be done in that regard. Now, just before we went on, you and I were talking, and I was on Coast to Coast for about 2 hours the other night, and spoke to George Noorian right after our broadcast. The next day he called my boss, and I work with WND, WorldNet Daily, and he said we need to form a partnership. He wants to use his program in cooperation with us to push for the passage of that national legislation, and of course we're all for it, and we're gonna be doing what we can. In fact, this weekend I'll be going out into Colorado to do some TV taping for that purpose. He has a TV program as well, so I'll be working on that aspect of it as in addition to doing my regular work. But we want to. It's not to get personal fame. The idea is to fix the problem, and it's fixable. And this is what's just that is nerve-wracking to a large degree, that we know the problem, we've identified the problem, but we don't have the oomph to fix it. And that seems to be where the problem lies.
Are there
and we know
areas
how to fix it.
That, yeah. Well, are there other areas that already have their grid system in place?
That already have it? Yes. More and more now we're seeing the countries that have experienced war on their soil are hardening for an EMP event. I know Israel has done it, China, and Russia. Now, I just did a story that will probably appear tomorrow on WND in which the Chinese have been conducting military exercises, said to be the largest, in which they simulate an EMP attack from the United States onto their own systems and how they work to counter it. So they're already taking EMP into account to make their own systems impervious to an EMP attack.
So well, could we work on a state level? I mean, to get our states, like we're in the state of California, can we work on a state level?
Yes. The it's important for the states to kick in until the federal government finally comes around. We've been working with a number of states to address this issue. What we've done, is we're trying to get it done, is get states to write to their governors and to their legislatures and legislators, which have jurisdiction over their utilities, by the way, to take that necessary action to harden those grids within a certain time frame. We were successful in getting last year in getting Maine to come up with legislation that was successful in working on ways to harden its grid. We're working with a number of other states, New York, Carolinas, Florida, to do the same. But the problem with that is that it will be inconsistent. It won't be at different levels, and each state will do what they feel like doing. It doesn't necessarily assure us that the level of protection has been achieved, even though they might do something, but it may not be. And of course, a lot of states, like in Maine, they rely on the grid system in Massachusetts, and that powerful lobby down there, utilities are resisting this because of the cost. So what does that do for Maine? Well, Maine then has to put in things that stop any pulse from hitting their systems, should there be such a thing, but putting in capacitors and groundings and what have you, and working on hardening their own technology within the state because they cannot get the cooperation from another state. So we've got that issue. you're going to have a ripple effect.
So even though you have hardening in your
state,
why
if you had someone at the federal level that can oversee this and get timetables set up so that states have to comply by a certain date, then we're cooking. But right now that's not the case. And the way the process works now, the Federal Energy Commission puts out requirement. They have all this kind of time for responses. Then there's rebuttal. The process is what is a killer, and it can go on for months and maybe even years before you begin to see any action, and then it may not be sufficient. And that's what I'm beginning to see is occurring now. It's basically a slow roll toward failure, and rather than a fast track toward failure, we're on a slow roll toward failure when we institute these kinds of bureaucratic obstacles to get things done, especially when the president, who brags about having a pen and a phone, could sign an executive order tomorrow, or even today, it's not 5 o'clock here yet, sign one today, and basically ordering the Department of Homeland Security to make EMP one of its national planning scenarios. And in that way, that then gets your emergency services, your law enforcement services, at the state and local levels to then respond to that and put in systems in order to be in compliance with that. And that's not happening. Again, it can be done by executive order or just by a letter. Then you don't need a law in that regard. He has sufficient authority, but he isn't doing anything. He's off playing golf, literally as we're speaking right now at Martha's Vineyard. And where is his concern about EMP?
Well, is there a form here that can be established so people can sign and get it going in that direction? Everybody in the world has the same needs, Michael. We all have roofing and electrical and you know what I mean?
Well,
so
there are entities that you can go on the web, as long as the web is still functioning, to Impact America, EMP America. We have set up a EMP coalition here in Washington. It's again, an informal group. The House of Representatives has now created an EMP caucus, and it's chaired by Representative Trent Franks from Arizona. And there's a number of others who sit on that, mostly Republicans, few Democrats, not many, but they are trying to push the legislation now, at least in the House, and they're having to overcome Representative Frank Upton, who's chairman of the Energy Committee, who's in the pocket of the utilities, and as a consequence, things aren't moving. So we've had to come up with alternative approaches to try and get that legislation passed in the House as well. And certainly in the Senate, it's dead, as long as we have the current leadership that's over there.
Well, we can remove people and say, you know what, you're ousted. We need you to work together with everyone.
Yeah.
This is, maybe we have to take steps in that format.
It's a start. You got to replace what I that's why I said November should be, if things turn out right in November, then I'm hoping that we can start moving ahead, moving forward with this stuff. Again, we're already way behind the power curve, but we need to do something to get going if we're going to operate in a legal fashion. And as I said, too, the president has executive authority to do certain things already within his own executive agencies, and he's not doing it.
Okay, what would it take to get him moving?
What's that?
What would it take to get him moving?
Well, you might have to sign up for his tee time, I don't know, on the golf course in order to get to him. I think people can write letters to the White House underscoring the urgency to get this done, and hopefully that'll get some attention. But he has that power and that authority right now, right to the Secretary of Homeland Security to try and get this issue on the front burner rather than the far, far back burner.
Now, is there a website people can go to that specifically addresses this?
As I said, Impact America has their own website.
Impact America?
EMP America. There aren't too many out there. You can go to the departments themselves, and they have websites, I guess, that allow you to write letters to U.S. senators and congressmen. That's really key, and they can certainly then pass that information, that letter, on to the respective agencies involved, and get them to respond as to why they're not doing things, and that helps them too. It gives them spotlight on this very serious issue of vulnerability, and I think that they probably would welcome that. So I would encourage people to also write to their senators and congressmen.
And there's local companies that I think are involved in with the power grid system going in and fixing it or hardening it. I think it's Siemens.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that company?
Oh, yeah, Siemens is out of Germany. Yeah, but they've got offices here. Yeah, the Germans are aware of EMP, but again, they're going to take their lead right to the major power companies. That's what people also need to do if they really need to get a national campaign going, and that's what we're hoping to get going through the auspices of George Noory at Coast to Coast, and of course I'll continue writing stories about it and making appearances on it, and to talk about the urgency on it.
Yeah, we can get the editorial.
There's a simplicity aspect here, and that is, if we're affected, so are other countries.
Yeah.
I mean, the food and everything else. So why not? Why do countries not work together on this instead of making the spread ridiculous? And again, it's like a family of unity coming together on the planet to not only protect its people but protect the planet as well. So, you know, I think we need to go in a different direction here. Maybe we need to look on a larger scale.
Well, I think you need to. I think you need to hit all of the buttons at the same time. Frankly, who on the international scale will be listening? Now, countries, the most industrialized countries of the world will be mostly affected. Your less developed countries, your third world countries, will be far less affected because they don't rely on the grid system as much as we do, or on deliveries, automated systems like we do. We're probably. This country is probably the most vulnerable throughout the world right now.
Well, do we ripple into Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Our grid system, yeah.
Absolutely. There was a solar flare strike in 89 that hit the Quebec Dam, and the pulse came down. It knocked out the lights of 6 million Canadians, and then that pulse came on down the eastern grid and was stopped by a capacitor in Allegheny, New York. And if that capacitor didn't stop that pulse, it would have knocked out the entire East Coast as well. So we are connected, to answer your question.
Yeah, so we need to be working with Canada also.
Yes, and Mexico, I'd add, because they have systems too that on which, you know, probably people closer to the border probably have some electrical exchanges. But I think that more and more we're going to be needing to work with other countries on this. The UN, of course, is dead on arrival. Can't get them to focus on anything. They haven't focused on half the world problems that exist right now. So we basically have to work from within and then get our leadership, for what it's worth, to start working with other countries to do the same.
Well, I think we need to worry about our own country first.
Yeah, I think so. I think the priority should be here first, work at the federal, state, and then at federal levels, and begin to try to get some action going. I know the Brits are very concerned about this too. The British, their Ministry of Defense has voiced similar concerns about the impact of a EMP. And so they're taking certain actions themselves. So the British have been very attuned to this. Would add too that insurance companies now are coming around more and more. Lloyd's of London, for example, put out a warning to insurance companies with whom they work, saying that if your company is knocked out from an EMP, don't expect to be insured.
Oh, that might be angle to come across with.
Yes,
money
it's a very good angle. Get insurance companies to start imposing that requirement on companies. That's another approach. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good one. You have a book.
I have a book.
You have released. Let's talk about that.
Okay. It's called A Nation Forsaken, EMP, it's about EMP, and it's about how the federal government has forsaken this country and not taking action on EMP. And it's called EMP, the escalating threat of an American catastrophe. And it's available on Amazon and at WND Books. And it lays out in very stark terms what those threats are to our critical infrastructures from an EMP, whether natural or man-made. And I also get into, toward the end, on what individuals can do for preparation for their families should there be a widespread geographic blackout that could last days, weeks, months, maybe even years. And what they need to do to you know, protect their families and what have you. And as I said, your urban centers are going to be most affected by such an event. And I I would encourage people to read it. It gives them a better foundation of what needs to be done, or and to explain the problem. Explains the problem and why we are so vulnerable and what we need to do to fix it. And
we need to send a book to every senator, one of your books to every senator.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. It,
have you gotten,
go ahead.
Have you gotten a lot of feedback from your book?
Well, you go to Amazon, there's been it's been liked by 4.5 out of 5 people. So I think the view about it is that it's very worthwhile, very forthcoming, and easy to read. This is a very technical subject, can be, but I'm not a techie, so I had to put it in plain talk English so that I would understand it. So and that's what I've done with this book. And it's not a very long read. It flows very, very nicely, and but it gets the point across. And I think that that's what. But it's a good primer on, and good background on what EMP is and how it's come about, how we discovered it, and what its implications are, how it would affect us in some of the more of our most critical. Life-sustaining infrastructures that we depend on just to survive on a daily basis.
You know, for all the people on their smartphones.
Yeah, forget it.
That
You're
will
out.
Be eliminated. You know, people just don't think about this funny scenario. I mean, they go about their daily lives and hanging off their wash and you know, looking at their smartphones, and they forget that there's another part here that we need to work together in cooperation to go further.
Well, I agree, but it's getting people organized to undertake this rather monumental effort. And we've had we've worked with Judge Jeanine recently on Fox News, and she did a whole program dedicated to EMP and its effects. And so we're reaching out more and more to folks to give them background so they can do their thing and explain it to people in their within their formats.
But you know, our PG&E has spent all kinds of money on smart meters.
Mm-hmm.
If they're doing that, why can't they go in and protect?
Well, yeah. they were the subject. They were the subject of that physical attack, but they were able to successfully end run it because they got an early enough warning. Once they start seeing their transformers being shut down, and they diverted things. You know, they supply also the Silicon Valley, so all of that was left uninterrupted, as I understand it. And now they. But whether they can withstand an EMP is something else, and that's another level of things. So you've got a number of vulnerabilities within the vulnerability, and that is physical security in addition to the hardening of the grid itself.
Now, Michael, we wanted to let our listening audience know that you also write on your boss is WND.
Right, WND.com.
You write articles there all the time. So if you go to
right.
that web page, there's a lot of information not only about the EMPs, but a lot of other things that are happening in the world. So that's a great
website. I've been writing because of my background. I've been writing on the rise of the Islamic State, and I also have a background on Ukraine and Central Asia, so in Russia, so I've been recovering that crisis as well. So it's been, in addition to EMP, it's all been a very busy time.
You know, it's pretty interesting as we're talking about this stuff right now. Everyone does have a smartphone, and I was going to say, you know, we have the capability to be able to put out an email or a notification to everyone who has a smartphone, and they can go ahead and vote on stuff that needs to be done in that format, and we could reach mm-hmm. everyone. There's so many people with smartphones. Why not do it that way?
Again, you've got to have the ability to connect with those smartphones and organize it.
Yeah.
There's only so much that we can do.
Well, it's almost like, Michael, it's almost as if the smartphones would not be operative unless you vote on this. Once you vote, your smartphone is back to you. You know? You know what I mean? It's a thing that this has to be passed. Let's take care of it. And, you know, and they have to read a certain paragraph or whatever so they know what's going on. And it's like a necessity.
Well, if there is an EMP, all the smartphones will be wiped out. So it's because your major communication hubs will be probably greatly affected as well. So the smartphone will be useless. And, of course, the number of people will be panicking as a consequence.
Well, there's so many things that people gathered together to go to Congress, and it still doesn't work. So we have to have the right congressman in there.
Well, that's the start. And, you know, they're confronted with a lot of issues. They're on, 5 weeks vacation now, so these kinds of urgencies are not on their minds at the moment. They are concerned about other issues. But this is not one of them right now, and it needs to be.
You know, their issue is to get re-voted back in. That's what they're concerned about.
Yeah, they're always campaigning, but they've got to see some substance, so that's, and we're not seeing it. We've got to have people who go there to get things done rather than to massage a political career.
So the problem here could be the lobbyists from the utility companies.
Yes, they're in those congressional offices all the time, and people like Fred Upton receive a lot of campaign contributions from them.
Yeah, let's stop lobbyists. I can't do that. But I mean that causes a lot of problems. The lobbyists.
Yeah, you're not going to get rid of the lobbyists, but what you can do is get your state authorities to start working on the utilities and at the same time two-track it to go to the federal government, start taking legislative action. We need a president who can really look upon this as a national priority. I think people were stunned when, you know, during the last campaign, I think it was, that Newt Gingrich, when he was a candidate, presidential candidate, was asked what is the number one national security threat, and he says EMP. Everyone shook their heads, what is an EMP? But he knows about it. Gingrich knows all about EMP and what its impact is. And he's part of this unofficial EMP coalition that we have here in Washington. There's about 28 members. And it also includes James Woolsey and Gingrich and a few others that are notables. But again, it's all ad hoc. It's all unofficial, and it's just talking to members of Congress and trying to get them to get that legislation underway. And that's where we've been focusing on now, is getting that legislation pushed to get this done. And if it can pass the House, then we got to work on the Senate. And right now, the Senate is a non-starter. Since we continue to be a nation of laws, we got to work within the law.
Yeah. Manipulate it.
Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah, as long as
it won't be the first time.
Yeah, exactly. So we all have to write our congressmen, and maybe
yes.
If we get a web.
And I would also add your governors and your state legislators as well.
Now, California is regulated by the Public Utilities Commission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would it do any good to write them?
Yeah, write to them, yeah. I think as many people to write as possible and as often as possible will be key.
Now, is Roscoe Bartlett still in Congress?
No, he was defeated. He's out, but he does talk about the issue, but it's not from the outside now. He has no legislative powers of any kind. So he's still a major advocate of dealing with this, eliminating this EMP threat, but he's on the outside now. He was very instrumental years ago while in Congress to push this effort. In fact, it was through his efforts that we even got the Congressional EMP Commission to convene and put out its 2008 study. And that study is very comprehensive. If anybody wants to, they can go they can just Google EMP Commission and actually read the whole thing on a PDF.
Oh, wow.
I mean, in my book, I put the summary of the 2004, which was a preliminary conclusion of the EMP Commission, and then when they published their final report in 2008, that's what ultimately is available now on the web, and it reinforced what the 2004 preliminarily said.
Do we have anyone in Congress Do we have anyone in Congress right now that will step up and talk about EMP?
Yeah, you have Trent Franks, who's the chairman of the EMP caucus, and he's always from Arizona. He's always willing to talk about it, and he's the one who's the sponsor of the legislation, of the critical legislation.
What's his name again?
Trent.
No, we're going to
Franks.
Trent Franks. Okay, good. Thanks.
So,
out of Arizona.
I think what we're going to do is write an article on our Facebook. I mean, that's our little contribution for you. But
I recently did a piece, a Q&A on what is it was on WND.com, and it was a Q&A on what the threat is from an EMP. And I go into a lot of that. You can take that as long as you give WND proper recognition and just reprint that on your website.
Great.
It was a Q&A, and it's already on the website.
So,
thank you, Michael.
Okay, we'll go on on your website and take that and put it on ours.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
I think the more the merrier.
Michael, is there anything we haven't covered today that you would like to bring up?
No, I think that just on EMP, that pretty much covers it. Again, we're on borrowed time, and even if we were to pass the legislation tomorrow, it'll take a good 5 years to fix it. So we really need to start kicking into high gear.
Mm-hmm.
And any help that you can give on your websites would be most helpful.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us today and educating our listening audience, because I'm sure a lot of them, well, most of them, haven't even heard of EMP. So,
happy to do it, and I'm happy to come back sometime and talk more further on it. It just, you know, we need to constantly hit this subject so that it becomes second nature to folks over a period of time.
Yeah, thanks for putting out so much energy into this. We appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you.
That is really wonderful. Thank you for, you know, bringing it to our attention and everyone else out there.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yes,
have a great day. And
you the same.
Keep on working. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can seem intense. Like breakup R&B intense.
I thought you said you loved the sweater that I got you. If you didn't, you could have told me.
Geico makes it easy. Just go to Geico.com anytime to update or check your policy without all the extra drama.
I even had a different
At Kaiser Permanente, we're always looking into the future, but we're not using a crystal ball. We're using science and technology to see what's coming for your health. Take something preventable, like heart disease. It's the leading cause of death in this country because only half of us manage our blood pressure correctly, so we made it a focus. The result? More than 86% of Kaiser Permanente members have their blood pressure under control. We may not be able to tell you your fortune, but we'll happily work on improving your future. Kaiser Permanente. Rise and thrive. Visit kp.org.